Hello, awesome people. Welcome to Embrace the Pivot. I'm Dr. C. Robinson, your host for the show. Join me as we discover what pivoting actually means and how you can embrace your pivot during life's transition. Happy Wednesday, everyone. This week, I have really been focusing so far on soft skills, which include negotiation, networking, everything that pretty much they don't teach you in college. Maybe you'll have a couple of professors that do teach you these skills. Soft skills are what you learn on the job. And it took me a while because no one taught me what networking was. No one taught me what negotiation was. I knew of it, but I didn't actually know how to do it. And you have to be a forever student because new technology comes out, new techniques come out, and you have to stay on top of how to do it, because how my parents negotiated or how my parents networked is completely different from how I network, how I negotiate, how I lead. You can't just say, oh, in my day, this is how it was. It may be true, but you have to focus on where are we today as a society and how can you get to where you want to go. Today, Mark Hirschberg joins me and he shares more about how to develop those soft skills. He's the author of The Career Toolkit, Essential Skills for Success That No One Taught You. He went from tracking criminals and terrorists on the dark web to creating marketplaces. He has spent his career launching and developing new ventures at startups and Fortune 500s. He also is a professor at MIT, and he actually helped start the undergraduate practice opportunities program dubbed MIT's Career Success Accelerator. He's had such a unique and crazy background, but he has been able to put together in a package all the soft skills that people need to thrive in today's society. I'm really excited to have you hear his story. Everyone, please welcome Mark.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. All right. I am really interested in your background. You worked at MIT, you tracked criminals and terrorists on the dark web, you help companies. Take me through your career journey.
I think of myself as having two parallel career journeys. So the first began when I graduated from MIT with my master's degree back in the mid-90s, and I started as a software developer. Very quickly, partially by my own motivation, partially it was right place, right time, because it was a dot-com era, I moved up in the ranks and I quickly became a director of engineering and then moved on and became a CTO. And so my career has traditionally been as a CTO, building startup companies or helping Fortune 500s who wanted to play startup. I've done this both as an employee and a consultant. From my perspective, whether it's a W-2 or a 1099, that's just an accounting issue. It's all about how can we build up an organization, build the tech team and product teams, and grow the company. But along the way, something happened to me. I started interviewing people about 21 years ago. And what I noticed is that when I would ask them a technical question, they would typically give me the correct answer. And by technical, I don't just mean software. Could be accounting or marketing or any other field. But when I asked questions about what people typically call soft skills, I'd get blank stares. These would be questions like, what makes someone a good teammate? What qualities do you look for in a leader? And no one could answer them. And I thought
back to my own. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, I thought to my own education, I was never taught this either, right? If you think about what you studied in college, we never teach you about leadership. We all tell you, oh, networking, it's really important, right? We've all heard this literally dozens of times. But if this is so important, why has no one ever stopped to teach it to us? And so the challenge we face is that all these skills, negotiation, leadership, communication, teamwork, networking, we've never been taught these critical skills. And so I started what I consider my parallel career, where I've been working in different programs trying to teach and develop this to people all up and down the age range across different educational backgrounds. Of course, I primarily do this at MIT, but I've done it elsewhere as well.
And where did the idea for the career toolkit come into play?
Having now taught this for a number of decades at MIT and elsewhere, I had been pushing MIT to try and take the content and expand it out to other schools, get online. MIT, of course, pioneered online education, but for various reasons, we didn't have the resources to do that. And so I finally decided, you know, I'm going to take this and get out there. And I originally thought I was just writing down some notes for the class, but it very quickly grew. And then I add in other topics as well that we don't even get to in that class, but I do elsewhere. And a couple hundred pages later, it became the book.
Ah, I love it. So you mentioned networking, and I 100% agree. Networking is the key to success. And I wasn't taught how to network. It was when I worked out in Hollywood, I was just thrown into situations and I learned that what I was doing was called networking. So when you teach people the soft skills, the networking, what are some of your key pieces of advice to properly network?
With each of these topics, the most fundamental piece is doing a mental shift to understand the appropriate way to do it. And then we get into actual techniques. So let's focus on the shift, because this is what people get wrong. I see so many people who think networking is going out and collecting a bunch of business cards at an event, right? Someone walks a room and come back 20 minutes later and look, I've got a dozen business cards, or adding connections on LinkedIn. Adding someone on LinkedIn and saying they're in your network, it's like swiping right on Tinder and saying that person's now your significant other.
Yep.
We know that's not true. But what happens when you swipe right on Tinder? Okay, you both express some interest. Now what? Well, now you actually build the relationship, right? And for Tinder, that means going on dates. For our networking, right? If you connected on LinkedIn or you got the business card, now that means we need to go build that relationship. You have to spend time with people, getting to know them, building the relationship, and building trust. And once you recognize it's not just about adding people on LinkedIn or adding connections, but relationship building, you shift how you see networking.
And how has the pandemic changed the landscape of networking?
This is a question I get a lot. There are pros and cons. I think it's gotten a little harder to meet someone serendipitously, right? It's harder to be in some virtual room and say, oh, hey, you're interesting, let's chat, especially as we all have Zoom fatigue. But there are some silver linings. So the first is that we actually all have more time. Think about that morning commute you used to do. You used to spend 30 minutes or more each day going into the office. Take that time you've gotten back, use that as your networking time. Once or twice a week, say, hey, I'm doing virtual coffee. Instead of driving from 8:30 to 9, I'm going to do a virtual coffee and use that time to catch up with someone. The other thing that's happened, if you think about how we network, it tends to be local. What do? We meet someone for coffee. We meet for drinks after work. It's a lot hard to do when you're in different cities. But now that we're all online, we can say, hey, let's do this virtually. It doesn't matter that we're 1,000 miles apart. That's going to get much harder once we go back into real life and we're all going to say, I want to get off of Zoom. I want to actually see people in person for a while. To use this time now to reach out to your remote connections, to the people who aren't local, and foster that relationship now online.
As you pivoted throughout your career, how were you able to maintain a mindset of, okay, I got this, I'm going to keep going, versus letting the challenges that you faced hinder your progression?
The challenges are what lets us develop new skills, which is what takes us further in our career. Whenever I think about trying to get to some new destination, that might be my next job, that might be a job further down the road, I know there are certain skills and experiences I need to qualify for that. And I might not have all of them today. So I need to create that plan to get there. And of course, if you're just doing the same thing over and over, it's not challenging, but you're also not growing. So I really see each challenge as an opportunity. It's a sign that I am developing these new skills, and it's going to make me stronger and set me up for what I'm trying to do down the road.
Now, do you deal with any recent college grads?
Yes, of course. I'm teaching undergrads at MIT and working with them both as undergrads, recent grads, and then my hiring. I've been hiring people from just out of college all the way through their 60s.
So I know that we talked about networking, but what is another soft skill that you wish all high schools or universities taught students?
Leadership. And this is talked about quite a lot, but I don't think people really explain it well to students or have them understand what leadership is. And unfortunately, people think of leadership positionally. People who are in a leadership role are leaders. Oh, you have the title, therefore you're a leader. But in fact, true leadership is influential leadership. And if we can help students understand this, and even working professionals, once you get this shift, you recognize you don't suddenly become a leader once you get the title. You become a leader when you step up from anywhere on the table. You can even be in that smallest seat, but you say, hey, I have an idea. Here's what I think we should do. Here's why. And get people to do it. Now you've become a leader. And this skill, like the others I've mentioned, this is what companies are telling us they're looking for. I've seen reports. We've gotten that at MIT. I've seen them from other universities. Corporate America is saying, this is who we want. We want people who are leaders. We want people with these other skills, networking, negotiations, communications, but we're not teaching it to them. And so if we could really instill at an earlier age this concept that leadership isn't a position, leadership is not yelling, shouting, being the person who makes a decision, but in fact, being the person who inspires that decision, that is true leadership.
Yeah. How do you help students understand that? Do you assign any homework or projects? And then from the beginning of the class, you can see their progression at the end of the semester?
The way these are best taught is through experiences, and barring experiences, through interactions. Now, this is very important to understand because when we think about our education, it is traditionally done through a lecture method. You have some experienced person standing up front and they're saying, do this, do A, B, C, and suddenly you understand this topic better. That works fine for marketing or physics or many of the other topics we study in school. But when it comes to these soft skills, that doesn't work as well. What we do at MIT, it's what's done at top business schools around the country. It is peer-based learning. And you can do this yourself. You don't have to go to a business school to get. Take other people, ideally with different backgrounds than your own. Now, these could be coworkers. They could be from your team, although you'll have very similar backgrounds. It could be from other departments. It could be just friends of yours. You could even set up a local meetup group or some other type of group just to get different people in. And then bring up a topic. The topic could be leadership. It could be negotiating. Read an article, listen to a podcast like this one, take a book, read a section of it, and then discuss it as a group. Because what you're going to find is the way you would think about some circumstance or challenge is different than how other people think about it. And getting those multiple perspectives, that's what's really going to enhance your understanding. There is no one way to network. There's no simple formula for leadership. So it's not memorization. It is understanding different perspectives, and that happens through this discussion and through practicing.
Okay, can we talk about negotiation? Because I know for myself, my friends, negotiation was never part of the conversation in college. It was never part of, oh, when you get this position, you can negotiate for different stuff. Again, it was all through learning, as you said, as I went throughout my career. So, one, how should someone approach a negotiation with their contracts? And two, what are maybe some of the key questions that should be asked or the key topics or items that should be negotiated?
I want to back up before I get to that and talk about an even more fundamental piece of this. Imagine if you have a job offer and it's for $60,000. So you go and say, I'm going to learn to negotiate. I'm going to go and negotiate and go from 60 to 61,000. That's not a huge lift. This isn't something you need to be a master negotiator to do, right? That's less than 2%. If you do that and you stay at this job for the next 30 years of your career, you've done nothing else, that $1,000 each year becomes $30,000. That one tiny negotiation just got you $30,000. But of course, that's not realistic, right? Of course, you're going to have other jobs, promotions, you're going to negotiate raises. It's going to be a lot more than 30,000. In fact, it's going to be not just tens of thousands, in many cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars by just negotiating slightly better. It's not about being the best negotiator in the world. It's about getting a little bit better. And if you think about it in those terms, the first thing that happens is you say, I have to learn how to negotiate. Read a book. Take an online course. You can do this in a matter of hours, 5, 10, 20 hours. And if it gets you just $1,000 more, think about the massive return you're going to get throughout your career. And by the way, this applies to all these skills. If you get that much better at leadership, that much better at communicating, you're going to have the same type of return. Now, it won't be, oh, you're a better leader, so we're going to give you a $1,000 raise. It won't be quite so direct, but it's going to translate into better opportunities and promotions and literally add 5 figures, 6 figures to your income. So we're going to talk about a couple of the techniques here, but really spend time going further, invest in reading a book or taking a class, because the return is massive. When you go and negotiate, the common mistake is people just think about money. They think about, I want more money, and that's fine, and you should, and the company knows you want more. But this is a zero-sum game, right? Every extra dollar they give you is one less dollar they have. Now, a common misconception in negotiating is that you want to negotiate each item one by one. If you try to negotiate a lot at once, it gets really complicated. And it does. But in that complication that we find more creative solutions. Good negotiators know you want to negotiate multiple things at once. So, for example, you're going to look at salary. You're going to look at potentially bonus. Could be vacation time. Work from home flexibility. If it's a startup, there could be stock options, could be title, could be a training budget. And now these are a whole bunch of things that you've just thrown together. And so what you can do is trade off, because even if they can't get you the dollar amount you want, they might be able to give you other things like work from home flexibility or a training budget. And that could wind up giving you the equivalent value. So go in and negotiate all fronts at once. That is the correct way to do it.
Okay. In your experience, if you can share, what has been the craziest item that you've seen negotiated?
I had someone, he came to me after we had the agreement, I believe, might have been before, and he wanted us to put out a press release about his joining. Now, if you're an executive, this is pretty standard. Executives, typically a company is going to put out a press release. And the reason they do that is just because the company is just saying, oh, press release, let's just get our name back in the news. Hiring executive is normal. This was for a director of product who was going to work for me. And it's not commonly done at that level. It would have looked strange. So he tried to negotiate for that, and it just wasn't appropriate.
It didn't happen to me personally, but I heard that a woman negotiated her rent in New York City and the company paid for it. So I was like, no one ever thinks of those types of things. But for her, keeping that lifestyle was critical. So I said, props to you. You know, and people, like you said, they just think of salary with negotiating and not everything else that could help them.
I'll share. So that actually reminds me of something I negotiated that might be the strangest. When I relocated to New York, I negotiated moving expenses, and that's not uncommon. But the apartment I moved into, the couch that I had back in Boston, it was this big oversized couch, and it just was not going to fit through the door to get into the apartment. Oh. So not only did I negotiate moving expenses, I actually got them to cover a new couch for me because nice. I couldn't take my old one. So maybe that was the strangest.
Nice. And it's those little things that make you feel valued even before you even start the position. So that's great.
I was going to say, think about this couch. Let's call it a $1,000 couch. And of course, that's after tax. And if you think about what my tax rate is, especially being in New York City, that's probably equivalent to about $1,500. So effectively, mm-hmm. they gave me an additional $1,500. It wasn't cash, but it was certainly a cash equivalent.
When you talk about interpersonal dynamics, what do you mean by that?
The last section of the book, this is where we get to these fundamental skills: communication, networking, negotiating, and ethics. And this is separate from the first two sections of the book, the first one about career planning and how to be effective within our jobs, and the second section on leadership and management.
If someone came to you stating that they were about to pivot or transition in their career, what are three essential steps you would share to help make that pivot successful?
This person should begin by looking at the target position for this job they want to get to. And it could be a job, it could be starting their own company, could be changing fields. You want to look and say, what are the requirements of this role? Certainly, we can see the written requirements. We can see a job description, but there's also unwritten requirements. And it's important to understand what those are. Likewise, if you're starting your own company, recognize that it's not just being good at whatever it is you do. You're going to run an entire business, and you have to deal with all the aspects of that business. And so as you plan this transition, you want to make sure you have the appropriate skills or an alternative for each of the things you have to do. Now, if it's a job, you better have the skills and the experience for each of the requirements, written and unwritten. If you're running your own business, you're not going to be an expert in everything, but you need to say, hey, I've got someone I can put on my advisory board. I have a partner, or I can hire someone who is knowledgeable in this area. I'm not an accountant. Good thing is accountants are easily available, and so I can always hire an accountant to cover that part of my business. So I don't have to be an expert in that. But as you think about that job transition, look at what those things are that you need to do to qualify, and then create a plan. And this could be months, even years, depending on how far away you are from meeting those requirements, to gain that experience and gain that knowledge to set yourself up for it.
Yeah. I really like the setting the plan, because I know a lot of people, they just go for it. They have no plan. They have no idea what they're doing. So I appreciate that you sharing about the plan. What's on the horizon for you?
I have the book out. I have the app out. And now I'm going around gaining kind of the interaction with the audience. I know that this content works. I've seen it on a small scale where I've done this one-on-one, or where I've done it, I say one-on-one, where I'm teaching in classes, it might be hundreds on one, but still where I can kind of interact with individuals. Now that we're going to a larger platform, now that there are literally thousands of people each month who are getting the book, I'm going to try and understand how well people are engaging with the content. Are there additional questions people have? Are there other things that I didn't cover in the book, or things people are hoping to do next? And then using that to guide, do I do another book? Do I do other things, and just seeing where to go next on that. So I'm in a feedback stage.
Awesome. And do you want to share a little bit about your app?
The app, which is free and can be found in both Apple and Google, is a companion app to the book. One challenge that we get with books like this is you read the book and you say, okay, these are some really great tips. And then 3 weeks later, you completely forget about them. It's a vague memory. Even worse, you read the book when you're sitting at home on your couch. That's not when you're networking, right? You're networking when you're out, typically, at least when there's not a pandemic. Mm-hmm. But of course, you're not carrying the book with you then. So the book has limited use. And I'm going to step aside for a second, just talk about media. In general, we as authors need to take the content of our book and pull it out from between the covers and make it available when and where the audience wants it. So in this case, I've taken a lot of the tips in the book, put them into this app. You don't even have to open it. The app will each day just pop up a notification. Think of it like a daily affirmation, but it's going to remind you of the content of the book to help reinforce it, right? This is spaced repetition, fancy name for flashcards, but you don't even have to open the app, and that's going to help you retain it better. You can also open the app, say, right before an interview or a negotiation or a networking event, and quickly go through the tips to do a quick refresher on it.
That, I love that. You know, where did that idea come from? Is it from your personal experience? Did someone suggest it to you?
My neighbor, who's a marketer, said, oh, you should build an app for your book. I said, okay, well, what should the app do? I said, I don't know, just build an app. So that was the inspiration. But my background, about 10 years ago, I was a turnaround CEO of a tiny media company. And so I spent a lot of time looking at media, this was digital media, and understanding where the future was. And I went to some conferences and began to understand, when you look at content linearly, there is a fixed pricing model for it. We all know what a book should cost, what a movie should cost, what, no matter how you put your content, whatever medium you use, we have historical references for how that should be priced. And there was a speaker at the conference who showed how, when you take it and put your content in a nonlinear way, and he talked about these kind of databases online where you've got interconnected content, think Wikipedia effectively, suddenly it becomes so much more valuable. And the pricing model actually changes. No one knows how to price Wikipedia. We know how to price encyclopedias, right? We all used to buy those big sets and we know what they would cost. If someone offered to sell you Wikipedia, it's harder to say what that should be worth. Now, thankfully, Wikipedia is free. And so it occurred to me, when you take your content and put it into a different format, it becomes more valuable potentially. Unfortunately, this app didn't exist, and I really thought I would just license it from someone. It didn't exist, so I patented it, created a white label version of it, for which my book is the first, and then later this year, I'm potentially going to license it to other authors and content providers, so it can be used for people learning other types of content.
Wow, that's awesome. So when you do that, feel like you should come back on the podcast and talk about that process. That's really cool.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah. Where can my listeners find you on social media?
You should start by going to my website, thecareertoolkitbook.com. And on the contact page, I list the different social media sites that I'm on, which is LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm also now on Clubhouse, although you don't link from that from the web. Actually, I'm not even sure if we're supposed to say we're in Clubhouse. I might get in trouble for that one.
I don't know. I tell people I'm on Clubhouse. I think it's okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Embrace the Pivot. Just enjoy the moment that you're in, embrace the moment that you're in, and know that if you adapt the forever student mindset, you are going to succeed 100 times more than you ever thought possible. So until next week, have a wonderful day.
You can follow me, Dr. C, on Instagram at embracethepivot. I hope all of you embrace your pivot.